Welcome to the Hermes Investment Podcast, bringing you up-to-date views from our team.
My name is Simon Mum from Hermes Investment Management, and I'm sitting here with Gary Greenberg, who's the head of our emerging markets team. Today we're going to talk about Gemologist. And Gemologist is a quarterly publication that is produced by Gary and his team, in which they share some of their most engaging insights from the work that they do in investing in emerging markets. I should say that Gemologist has been published since 2013, but this is the very first time we've produced a podcast about it. The current issue of Gemologist deals with the supportive forces or the tailwinds the emerging markets are experiencing right now. I worked with Gary on the Gemologist at the start of 2016, came at the end of 5 years of successive underperformance by emerging markets of developed markets. Right now, the situation is very much different. And this is what this Gemologist talks about. It talks about the tailwinds for emerging markets, how they've come to arrive in this situation in just 2 years. I suppose my first question for Gary is, at the start of 2016, emerging markets had endured 5 years of underperformance against developed markets. What changes have we seen since to arrive at the situation where we are now?
Well, part of this was part of the turnaround was a response from the Chinese authorities to stimulate the economy. They did that various ways through low interest rates, through encouraging stock market investment, and making property investment easier. This, in turn, stimulated demand globally for commodities, which had been spiraling downward, not only stabilized, but started to move up substantially. This helped some of the weakest emerging markets, the fragile five markets that are commodity exporters, such as South Africa, Mexico, Brazil, Russia. And then in particular, Brazil had a sea change with the impeachment of Dilma Rousseff, which gave the market quite a boost with the view that trajectory would even out and pretty soon Brazil might be on a path towards sustainable growth again. All these factors combined allowed emerging markets to stabilize and go up a little bit in 2016. The U.S. continuing U.S. recovery, the beginning of the European recovery, a number of other factors, including undervalued currencies and the beginning of improvements in profitability, all conspired to help emerging markets to a very strong year last year.
Mm. And are there any more sort of deep-seated changes happening within emerging markets? I mean, a lot of the factors that you referenced then as idiosyncratic or quite short-term, any long-term progressive transformations happening within emerging markets that are coming to manifest now?
Yeah, there are. One can look at emerging markets in a short-term lens and see the cyclicality and see that we've come off the bottom of the cycle, have moved some ways up. But there's also a secular change going on. One can look at the composition of the emerging market benchmark 10 years ago, countries that were commodity exporters, very cyclical, and capital importers, such as Brazil, Turkey, Russia, South Africa. These were some of the biggest weights in the market. And now countries that are capital exporters that have foreign exchange, lots of foreign exchange reserves, and tend to be commodity importers, such as China, Korea, Taiwan, account for over 50% of the index. If you add India in there, it comes to closer to 60%. In addition to that, the types of sectors that are represented in the market are different. 10 years ago, resources and energy were almost a quarter of the index. Now they're less than put together, they're less than 15%. So technology and financials now are the two largest sectors. So there has been a change, and to characterize the change, you would say that it's become less cyclical and more structural. The type of representation that the emerging market benchmark has.
So at an economic level, the economies are becoming more resilient. And at a corporate level, they're less exposed to basic industries and manufacturing and more to value-adding industries.
I think that's true. I think that's how you could characterize that. If you look at the S&P over the last 40 years, that's also the case, that most of the value was represented by companies that were that had mostly tangible assets, and now most of the value is in companies with intangible assets, like Facebook and Alphabet, etc. Similarly, in emerging markets, we're seeing companies with intellectual property receive substantial valuations and therefore represent a larger part of the benchmark, which we think makes the whole benchmark more sustainable.
Hmm. So looking at the current rally, would you say how much of this is driven by higher oil prices, how much are cyclical forces taking effect, or how much of it is driven by the deeper changes that we've just been discussing?
I'd say it's about half and half, really. The oil price and better commodity prices have helped countries, the traditional commodity exporters, and has underwritten, you know, reasonable growth, great for them. But more importantly, the rally, especially last year, was led by companies like Tencent and Alibaba, which really have nothing to do with the cycle at all. They're just innovative companies which have captured a lot of the retail market, for example, in China. China continues to grow at a reasonably fast clip at about 6% plus. And within a country growing at over 6%, you can find a lot of companies that are doing pretty well. In addition to that, India is growing at a pretty good clip as well, probably will beat 7% over the next calendar year. And again, in that kind of environment, companies can thrive. So we're seeing non-cyclical countries just continue to rack up gains. And within that, companies can perform quite well.
In this issue of Gemologist, we look closely at profit margins and how the profit margins for emerging market companies are comparing to those in developed markets. How are they positioned at the moment relative to developed markets in terms of profit margin and with their own history? How attractive are the margins?
Emerging markets saw their margins collapse as a result of the commodity collapse and also the fact that the developed economies weren't importing very much. That's beginning to change now. Well, the commodity aspect has changed over the last year and a half or so, and so commodity prices are stronger. But the more important change is that emerging market country exports are starting to pick up. So margins now in the emerging economies are nowhere near their peaks of over 10%, but they're starting to creep up from trough levels. They're still trailing developed margins a little bit, but overall the prospects for the margins going to 8, 8.5, maybe even 9% are looking pretty good. Of course, that's partly the result of a better quality of company in the index. Companies who don't have a lot of fixed assets can usually have a better profit margin. We're also seeing that reflected in the return on equity, the profitability of emerging market companies, which now is a little bit better than those have developed and should continue to improve over the next year, year and a half.
What do you think is driving that better relative profitability?
Part of it is that wages in emerging markets have been very, very muted. It represents less of a cost. We've also got the situation where developed market economies, especially in the United States, have been doing well for a while, so they're seeing actually wage pressures now. Emerging market economies are just turning now. Brazil's coming out of recession now. Russia's coming out of recession now. South Africa may come out of recession soon. And so the pressures that used to be there in terms of the cost side are muted. And we're starting to see top-line growth. Capacity utilization in the West is higher than that in the emerging markets. And so there again, there's more catch-up that's available.
So the profit margin outlook is quite healthy for emerging markets.
It does look healthy. Obviously, there's the caveat that that we've just seen with U.S. interest rates rising. And if the 10-year goes past 3.25, 3.5, it'll be a headwind for all markets, as we've seen, and that emerging markets won't be invulnerable to that.
We saw emerging markets affected quite significantly by the Federal Reserve just bringing into the public realm the notion of tapering in 2013, particularly emerging market currencies. They depreciated quite sharply during the taper tantrum. They seem to be in a strong position now. But given, especially as the Fed continues to tighten monetary policy, what are your views now to the resilience of emerging market currencies?
Emerging market currencies are pretty undervalued still relative to their export shares and relative to the inflation that that they've experienced over the years. Although the U.S. is starting to experience inflation, emerging market countries are not. Capacity utilization levels, as I mentioned, are quite low still. So fundamentally, as the U.S. perhaps heats up and then maybe overheats, this will pull exports from emerging markets, which is a positive. The U.S. probably won't pull strongly enough, and I would probably include Europe there too, probably won't pull strongly enough to create capacity issues in emerging markets. That's not to say that CapEx won't pick up. It will, because a lot of the capacity is old. But overall, it doesn't look like there's going to be an inflationary problem, at least the next 6 months to 9 months in emerging markets. After that, it's possible. But overall, it just looks like the countries are competitive and their currencies should reflect that. Having said that, the dollar has been extremely weak over the last couple of months, and it's possible that it's been too weak. There's a debate about the fiscal deficit and how big it's going to get with the tax bill that's just gone through in the U.S. But it's more than likely that the dollar has been somewhat oversold. And so, you know, investors hoping for emerging market currencies to strengthen substantially from here probably will be disappointed.
Mm-hmm. Because the U.S. dollar is typically a headwind for emerging markets, a strong U.S. dollar, I should say.
It has been in the past, and that's because emerging markets used to be commodity-oriented exporters and capital-starved. So as the dollar went up, their debt became more expensive and harder to service, and commodity prices, so the dollar goes up, the commodity prices tend to go down. So that was another aspect. But now that you've got a lot of the emerging markets who have good financial conditions externally and internally, and who are not hurt by rising commodity prices, by falling commodity prices, the actual fundamentals have changed, and they shouldn't be hurt very badly by a rising dollar. So our view is that the currency outlook is basically neutral, maybe slightly positive, but shouldn't a rising dollar shouldn't kill the emerging market cycle. That's our view.
When you're looking at companies in emerging markets, how much of a factor is the currency in your decision to invest or to hold the companies? Are you more concerned with the sort of the profitability of the companies, their operations, or if you're investing in exporters, how much of a view do you take on the currency?
It's not that important because we don't feel that anybody can do a great job of forecasting unless there's an inflation differential that's substantial, for example, in the case of Turkey or in the case of Nigeria or Egypt, and it just builds up over time. Then you know at some point there's going to be a correction in the currency. And if we can see that coming, then we will refrain from taking a position. But it's also true that a factory in a country will probably retain its value in hard currency if it's a competitive factory. It doesn't really matter what happens. The goods are the goods, and if they're competitive goods, then they'll probably represent value. So we do a combined bottom-up and top-down analysis, and in our top-down analysis, we do look at the outlook for the currency, and that forms part of our country view. Then when we marry the top-down view of the country with the bottom-up view of the stock, we do take into account, if we can see it, a likely appreciation or depreciation of the currency and factor that in. But it's usually, because it's not that predictable, we usually don't make it a major focus.
Turning to capital expenditure, I mean, CapEx in the West is something of a foreign concept these days. But in emerging markets, with companies generating strong free cash flow and the fact that in recent years they've been underinvesting a lot compared to their history, there's a feeling and there's an observation that you make as well that they might have a need to invest more in their property, their plant and equipment. Do you think we're at the beginning of a new CapEx cycle in emerging markets?
I think we are. It's more to replace antiquated property, plant, and equipment, and to replace it with smart machines which have sensors on them, Internet of Things, so that they can know when stresses are going to cause the production process to break down. This isn't the cheapest thing in the world, but it is. It's necessary to stay competitive globally. Also, the purchases of robots are skyrocketing. I would also say, though, that with the Trump tax cut, the mood in corporate America has changed over the last probably month, and there is now an interest in hiring more people and expanding. Now, it's not that easy to find people because unemployment is low and a lot of the labor force is not too good. The unemployed labor force that's left, I mean, is not too good. So it's likely that U.S. companies will also be moving towards higher levels of automation, robotics, and using the Internet of Things. These are themes which, especially in Taiwan and China, you can find, and we do find companies that are quite levered to this idea.
How exciting for you is technology as an investment theme in emerging markets?
Well, we're all being changed for better or worse by technology in our daily lives. And every company I know of, whether it's developed or emerging, is focused on becoming more efficient because global competition is so tough. Emerging market companies are no different. They have to focus on developing better and faster and more efficient ways to do things. And technology is, generally speaking, the way. In emerging market stocks, you can find companies that are developers of technology. We have some of those in our portfolio, such as Advantech, Hanhai, Landmark, Tencent, Taiwan Semiconductor, et cetera. And companies that are users of technology, which is making them more efficient. For example, Bharat Forge in India makes crankshafts for trucks. It uses PhDs in metallurgy to make the crankshafts a little bit lighter and a little bit stronger, such that they've taken about 40% of the market share of the United States Class 8 truck market. So if you want to be competitive globally, you have to use technology. And so in emerging markets, it's just as much a theme as it is in the West.
How many times have you come across an emerging market technology company that is a formidable rival to a developed market competitor?
Well, some industries have gone to emerging markets and stayed there. So Taiwan Semiconductor is a foundry, is streets ahead of Micron and Toshiba. The Bharat Forge, for example, is ahead of its competitors. Motherson Sumi has turned around companies in the Western Hemisphere and in Europe because it just seems to understand how to make an efficient car part better than its competitors. In Taiwan, there's a company which does epitaxial wafers, which are for optoelectronics. In other words, sending data via light as opposed to sending it versus electricity, and seems to have stolen a march on most competitors globally. Oftentimes, the best companies are in Europe or the United States, but there are emerging market companies which are either part of a global supply chain or do have technological leadership. Samsung, for example, in displays, there isn't a company in the world that has better displays than them. Samsung for 3D NAND, for example, which is a type of chip, is the world leader. So there are companies in emerging markets who are world leaders, not as many as I think they're going to be in 15 years, but there are some.
Mm. And that speaks to the trend that we talked about before about emerging market companies, more of them being driven not so much by basic industry or manufacturing, but moving further up the value chain. Turning back to the markets as they are at the moment, do you think we're at the beginning, the markets rose last year, but do you think we're in the early stages of a bull market in emerging markets relative to developed markets? And if so, how far into it do you think we are?
I think we're around the middle. We could have a correction. This correction, which has started the last couple of days, could continue. And as we've said in the past, that it would come from the developed world, and indeed it is coming from the developed world. Higher interest rates represent a headwind for all equity markets. On the other hand, given that we're in the early stages of, I would say, the bear market for bonds, investors will probably be selling bonds, and they'll have to buy something, and they could easily buy stocks. And as we mentioned, some of the emerging market countries are pretty strong and stable and robust. So I think we're probably about halfway through. A correction now wouldn't be a harmful thing. It would be a good thing to buy into. The fundamentals in emerging market countries are solid. And we should remember that the higher interest rates in the U.S. are not coming to rescue the dollar. They're coming because growth is strong. And growth is strong because employment is strong and consumers are strong. So it's really pretty positive for global growth, and emerging markets are the play on that. Money's been coming in pretty steadily, and I think it'll probably continue. Valuations are reasonable, and the profit outlook is decent. So all in all, I think we have further to go.
Mm. Well, the valuations, they're definitely off their price to book and price to earnings multiples. How do you see them now? Do you think they're, when you said they're reasonable, do you think they're fairly valued, or were they getting close to fully valued before Friday?
I don't think they were getting close to fully valued. Both on price to earnings and price to book were just above the long-term average. So fully valued would be 40, 50% higher from here. Now, you know, I don't know that we're necessarily going to get there this cycle. We may not. It depends on the enthusiasm of markets, and it also depends on the earnings prospects. If the profitability of emerging markets goes up substantially, if we have an extended global cycle, then the earnings themselves will lower the PE. More earnings, same price, lower PE. And we're seeing that right now with the U.S. Results, where the earnings came in stronger than expected, and therefore the multiple really hasn't gone up, even though the market has. So that's entirely possible for emerging markets. Estimate revisions in emerging markets have turned positive for the first time in many years. And so I think that valuations still make sense. They're not in the basement anymore. You needed to buy in the early part of 2016 to get the bargain basement prices. But they're not on the roof either. There's a good ways to go before they get to be dangerously overvalued. We're nowhere near that.
Hmm. Do you think there's enough investor enthusiasm for emerging markets to force them to become a victim of their own success in terms of too much momentum into emerging markets causing them to become overvalued? Do you see that as a risk for 2018?
It is a risk. Before the move in the U.S. bond market, we saw that as the major risk for 2018. Flows were threatening to become too strong. Valuations were moving up too quickly ahead of the earnings and ahead of the fundamentals. That, as we mentioned, is they've come off now, and there's a new threat. The threat is, you know, just high. How high is the U.S. 10-year going to go? It's possible that it goes to 3.5-4%. If that happens, as I said, all markets will have trouble. But if it stays in the 2.8 to 3.25 range, I think emerging markets will be fine.
And to what extent do you think the cyclicality of emerging markets indices to your investment strategy, to what extent does it actually matter? I mean, is your investment philosophy, you're not focused on short-term trading, you're focused on looking beyond the cyclical tailwinds and focusing on secular growth drivers and the types of opportunities that many people seek in developed markets. These are quality, value-adding, and sustainable companies.
Yeah. When I started at Hermes seven and a half years ago, I was reflecting on my time in emerging markets over the previous 20 years or so. And I was thinking about the regrets that I had that I hadn't personally held on to some of the great companies in emerging markets, which over decades have just gone up and up and up in dollar terms.
What kind of companies are these?
Some consumer goods companies, some tech companies, some discretionary companies, even some banks, actually. And I was thinking, God, somebody should just put together a portfolio of these companies and just hold them because they do deliver over time. And so then I thought, well, actually, maybe that somebody should be me. And so that's what we've done. We've put together a collection of companies that you'd want to own, whether you're a global investor or emerging market investor, because they're just very good companies. And whether they're focused domestically in their own home market or focused globally, they're able to generate value and create value and add to that over time. So cycles do go up and down, and the valuation of emerging market stocks, goes up and down. But over the long term, that move will be exacerbated for cyclical companies that don't earn their cost of capital. But for companies that do earn their cost of capital, they may not go up as much in the good times, but they will steadily add value to an investor over time. And that's the kind of portfolio that we think we have.
And what kind of resonance does it get amongst investors when you describe this approach to them? Are more people interested, to put it crudely, in a quick buck, or are they willing to go on the journey with you?
Well, we'll see. Everybody says they're interested in the long term, and everybody tends to be a long-term investor until they're not. But I do find that people are intrigued by the idea of long-term compounding companies. They've seen that in the U.S. and Europe, and they've seen how these companies have bounced back from what looked like a macro near-death experience in 2009 to tripling, quadrupling, or even more. So it's no longer the case that all emerging markets are the poor cousins of the developed. You have companies now, which we talked about, which are really quite competitive globally. And if you can own those companies, you know, it's just another arrow in your quiver for having exposure to these countries that are growing more quickly, but ultimately the companies which know what they're doing and can develop into substantial and very profitable businesses. So people like the idea. When the cycle does turn down, which it eventually will, we expect to be outperforming during that time. And we expect that over time we'll be able to add some value in dollar terms on a compound basis. So that's what we're trying to do.
Thanks for your time today, Gary. It's been great discussing this current issue of Gemologist, and I wish you the best for 2018.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Hermes podcast. If you found it interesting and would like to listen to more podcasts by Hermes, please visit our website, hermes-investment.com, and search for podcasts. These podcasts are for information purposes only, and the views, information, or opinions expressed therein are solely those of the individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of Hermes Investment Management and its employees. Performance should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. All the performance represented is historical. Past performance is not a reliable indicator of future results, and investors may not recover the full amount invested.